100 years ago, we were still pretty much a Victorian society with very traditional values. But there were still women who held strong nationalist views and weren't afraid to speak out.
4 p.m. Friday on Lower Abbey Street. It's the start of the weekend commute for many. Though 4 p.m. 100 years ago on the 2nd of April, it's the location where Cum an Amann was formed.
When these women met that day to form this organisation, they were doing something that to them was logical. There was no excitement about it, it was matter-of-fact and everyday to them.
And 4 p.m. on the 2nd of April was a perfectly logical time to meet too.
So you're looking at young women who lived at home, who didn't need to work, or young women who were teachers or maybe who were able to be here for 4 o'clock. But you didn't have working class women in this organisation. It was a very class-based situation, just as the Irish Volunteers was. They weren't revolutionary firebrands. Jenny Wise Power, she would be a great example to 21st century young women because she was not very well educated. She set up her own business, a restaurant in Henry Street, and she educated her family on her business acumen and her success. And her son eventually became Attorney General. Agnes O'Farrelly was 40 and Margaret Dobbs was 40 odd, and the two younger women were in their 30s. So they weren't a group of teenagers organising a revolution. They were mature, adult, middle class women.
While some of the women in Wins that day at 4 p.m. were already involved with nationalist organisations or were part of the suffrage movement, this type of meeting was a first for Elizabeth Bloxham.
Elizabeth Bloxham was from Westport and she was a social science teacher. But she said she felt very, very nervous at being at this meeting, and she said to Jenny Wise Power, "I've never been at the founding of anything before. What do we do now?" And Jenny Wise Power said to her, "We just elect ourselves." And so they elected themselves. The executive committee, which was elected after this meeting, and it was a very businesslike meeting, was Jenny Wise Power, Margaret Dobbs, Professor Agnes O'Farrelly, Mary Collum and Louise Gavan Duffy. Elizabeth Bloxham became the national organiser.
At the time, Agnes O'Farrelly put the constitution to the attendees. Its purpose was to advance the cause of Irish liberty, to organise Irish women in furtherance of the object, to assist in arming and equipping a body of Irishmen for the defence of Ireland, and to form a fund for these purposes to be called the Defence of Ireland Fund. But initially, not everyone was on board.
Yes, Mary Kettle, who was married to Thomas Kettle, her father-in-law was a big employer. He was a big farmer out in County Dublin. And Mary Kettle was very concerned that they would be anti-Redmond or anti the Irish Parliamentary Party. And the women had to mollify Mary Kettle that this would not happen and that this organisation was going to be totally outside of politics. And as she was mollified, they then set about setting up the organisation. To them, what they were doing was normal and everyday. They didn't sit there saying, "Wow, we're part of history now." They were just setting up an organisation, the female version, the ladies' auxiliary of the Irish Volunteers. It was all very matter of fact.
Well, that's all about Cum an Amann, which was formed 100 years ago this week. And that was Louise Denver talking to historian Anne Matthews in Wynn's Hotel in Dublin's Lower Abbey Street, where the first meeting took place. Anne Matthews is the author of Renegades, Irish Republican Women 1900 to 1922. You'd have heard a reference there to Jenny Wise Power. Well, this week on Post is bringing out a commemorative stamp to mark the centenary of Cum an Amann. It'll feature a photo of the first women's executive of Cum an Amann with Jenny Wise Power to the forefront. Well, I'm joined by Conor Mulva, lecturer in Irish history at University College Dublin, and their man working on the decade of commemorations, who's here to take up the story, as it were. Now, Cum an Amann was described by the historian Cal McCarthy as hardly an army, but not a sewing circle either. So what were they about and how seriously were they to be taken?
I think the Cum an Amann need to be taken more seriously than perhaps they are. The movement, as it was set up, received a lot of criticism, particularly from nationalist women who were, let's say, of the Irish Parliamentary Party tradition or more of the moderate or constitutional tradition, because they had done a lot of hard work over a very long period in trying to get votes for women. And for them, the suffrage issue came before the national question. However, for the people involved in Cum an Amann, the solution of the Irish question had to precede votes for women. And this again goes back to the Home Rule Bill, because there was no provision in that bill for Ireland to make suffrage arrangements different to those of the House of Commons. They had to mirror the Westminster suffrage arrangements. So therefore, for these Irish nationalist women, secure, as they eventually went on to attempt to do, a republic, and after that, votes for women will flow from there. So this marks a key cleavage within the suffrage and within the early 20th century feminist movement at the time. So they're an extremely important movement, and I think their work, quite apart from the fundraising work, begins to prove itself to be quite active. And although they're clearly and marked out as an auxiliary doing field ambulance work primarily, they're still a key part of the paramilitary organisation.
They were trained how to use rifles though, weren't they?
They were indeed. And this is another key point. One of the distinctions that's brought out between the Irish Citizen Army and Cumann na mBan is that the Irish Citizen Army didn't make distinctions on gender and that there was equal membership for all. However, Anne Matthews herself has pointed out that the only woman on the 1915, early 1916 roll books of the Irish Citizen Army with an army number and therefore an active member was Constance Markovich herself. So that gender divide may have existed more on paper. And in a conference recently in Kilmainham, this was again brought out by various speakers that even within the Irish Citizen Army, there was a lot of men who turned around and asked women to do women's work as they saw it, making tea and sandwiches, fundraising, these kind of issues. So that gender equality may not have existed on the ground in the Irish Citizen Army in the same way it did. Whereas in Cumann na mBan, they very much were able to clean and service rifles. They engaged in marksmanship shooting. There's a very vivid accounts of the Christmas 1915 rifle practices in the Divis Mountains in Belfast.
Actually, you tweeted a wonderful photograph today of women actually engaging in rifle shooting practice.
And interestingly, that photo that I tweeted, it's from An Clive Sullis, the Gaelic Leaves newspaper, but it's of British women. And this is a photo that the O'Rahilly puts in his paper. And underneath it, he says, here's a photo of... This is all Askelga, but here's a photo of British women engaging in shooting practice. This is something that people in Ireland should look into and investigate further. It's a much better sport than tennis. So we can see that militarisation of women happening very quickly in this period.
Would one of the reasons perhaps that they are not taken seriously or were not taken as seriously as you suggest they should have been due to the fact that a number of prominent members had husbands who were leading figures in the Irish Volunteers?
I've looked through some of the key members and the executives of the movement, and what we have here is a clear split between, let's say, the wives of prominent Irish volunteers. Padraig Colum's wife was Colum. She was involved. The O'Rahilly's wife, Nancy O'Rahilly, was involved. Owen McNeill's wife was involved in the movement. But then there are these independent women who are heavily involved. Agnes O'Farrelly, who's lecturing Irish history in UCD. Constance Markovich has an interesting relationship with the movement in her early days, and that she eventually moves away from it because she says this isn't feministic enough, this is an auxiliary organisation and I don't agree with that on principle. But she's involved in the early period, and Jenny Wise Power herself is there in her own right. She has no nationalist connections at that point that would bring her in through any man. She is simply there as an ardent feminist and a nationalist.
Dimpna in Cavan, I presume she's in Cavan because she wants to point out that Professor Agnes O'Farrelly was a native of Virginia in County Cavan, one of the prettiest towns in the country. Thank you very much indeed for pointing that out, Dimpna. But to what extent, there was an organisation called Inini na hÉireann, the Daughters of Ireland, and I think it was in existence already when Cumann na mBan was established. I stand to be corrected on that. But did Cumann na mBan supplant Inini na hÉireann in any way, or did it complement it?
It, in some ways, the way that this is written about is that Inini na hÉireann really formed the precursor and do the groundwork, and that's why Cumann na mBan is essentially, it constitutes a hardening of attitudes of Irish nationalist women's movements at this point. Inini are in existence from 1900 onwards, so they're a long established movement. And there's also the Clonagale Girls, who are basically a girls' equivalent of the Nationalist Boy Scouts founded by Bulmer Hobson and Constance Markovich. So there are these pre-existent women's movements. However, Cumann na mBan really brings this to a new level. And when they're founded, after a very short months, I think it's in May of 1914, Inini na hÉireann form themselves and constitute as the second Dublin branch. So there's a centre branch and there's also an Inini na hÉireann branch of Cumann na mBan. So it subsumes itself voluntarily into Cumann na mBan organisation.
Question from a texter: how many members did Cumann na mBan attract?
This is a difficult question to answer. What we have, Cal McCarthy's book on Cumann na mBan is quite good on this, and she reckons that on the eve of the 1916 rising, there are splits within Cumann na mBan, and this is something that I'll go on to talk about in a minute, but there are roughly 650 members by the eve of the 1916 rising.
Somebody else asked, were there any working class women in the organisation? It does have a very middle class reputation.
This is where, again, after the 1916 rising, that there's a popularisation of the Republican movement in general. There are key barriers to entry within Cumann na mBan that preclude working class women from joining it. One is, even we heard there in the excerpt at the start, it was 4 p.m. that the first meeting that to inaugurate Cumann na mBan was held. Any woman with a job would have been working at 4 p.m. On a Tuesday afternoon and therefore couldn't have gone. It was also a shilling to join up to Cumann na mBan, which represented a significant amount of women's wages, particularly at this time. So there are key barriers to entry. And then finally, when a ball for Cumann na mBan is held nationally at the time, there are examples from outlying units and provincial units of Cumann na mBan where working women aren't invited and it's for ladies only. So there's clear class distinctions there.
You mentioned splits. Let's talk about two of them, because there was one split when war was declared and there was a further split, and that was a treaty-related split. Let's talk about the 1914 split, first of all.
So John Redmond's Woodenbridge speech splits the Irish Volunteers in September and October of 1914. This mirrors a movement within Cumann na mBan, and the same split occurs. So Cumann na mBan splits in this period, and what we see is that although the executive largely side with the minority Owen McNeill's Irish Volunteers, it seems that a large number of the rank and file sided with the National Volunteers. And just like the National Volunteers, they seem to have fallen away. So it's the minority who maintain activity and go on to become the 650 members active on the eve of the 1916 Rising. Now, obviously, 650 don't participate. The second split then occurs after the treaty, when Cumann na mBan splits in two over the issue. There's a wonderful illustration on the back cover of Anne Matthews' book, which shows the pro-treaty Cumann na mBan making bread and sandwiches in this period. So I think that marks a key distinction for me between the work of the pro-treaty and the anti-treaty Cumann na mBan, who are extremely active in the Republican side of the split in the Civil War. The pro-treaty Cumann na mBan go on to form Cumann na Saoirse, and Jenny Wise Power, who's involved from the very start, splits at that point, and she's seen as being a traitor by many in the Republican movement after siding with the Free State after so long.
Now, we're joined on the line from North Galway by Mary Murphy, biographer of Eva O'Flaherty, feminist and member of Cumann na mBan. Mary, you're very welcome to the programme. Tell us about the involvement of Eva O'Flaherty in Cumann na mBan.
Thank you, Miles, and good evening. And I was looking at that photograph from the Clive Sullivan from 1913 earlier, and what struck me about those ladies with their rifles was the hats they were wearing, because Eva O'Flaherty, in fact, was a milliner. She had two extraordinary interests all of her life, nationalism and millinery and fashion. She actually ran the St. Colman's knitting industries in Achill for over 50 years. But she came hot foot from London to Dublin in 1914, and it's actually in Louise Gavan Duffy's, in her witness statement 216 to the Bureau, the Military Bureau. That's where we first found the mention of Eva O'Flaherty. She's called Miss O'Flaherty of Achill, was a paid secretary for some time on O'Connell Street with Louise O'Flaherty. And we also know from her obituaries in the Irish Times when she died in 1963 that she knew and was involved with Countess Markovitch and Maud Gonne. She was friendly and wrote to Dr. Kathleen Lynn and Moira Comerford and Anita McMahon all of their lives. They were, seemed to have been a very close group of friends. And we also know that Mr. De Valera sent Mark Killalay to give an oration at Eva O'Flaherty's burial in Donnapatrick Graveyard in Carlistran. And at that, people, it's just 50 years ago, so there were quite a number of people alive who remember it. He spoke at length of Miss O'Flaherty, as they called her, her involvement with Cumann na mBan. She was given full military honours and there was a tricolour on her coffin. So we're perfectly clear that she had, at least for a time, she would have been in at the early end, the genteel, the beginnings of Cumann na mBan, because Eva O'Flaherty was born in Listonagh House here in Carlistran. She certainly had a silver spoon-like existence in her initial years. Then she went to Alexandra Mount Anvil. She was in Paris. She was in Limerick, London.
But she was also apparently very well organised when it came to Cumann na mBan, wasn't she?
She was extremely well organised. We have, from Louise Gavan Duffy's own words, the witness, the statement she gave, she speaks of how she recalls the way this Miss O'Flaherty kept such close account of every stamp that she sent to all of the letters to whom she would have been sending letters to people in the organisation. So even though it appears she wasn't a member of Cumann na mBan for any great length of time, she stuck firmly in Louise Gavan Duffy's mind as having been somebody that was of some substance. And we know from people who did know her, she had an extraordinary personality.
Okay. Connor, we referred earlier to the fact that Cumann na mBan was hardly an army, this is the Cal McCarthy quote, hardly an army but not a sewing circle either. They were involved in the 1916 Rising and a number of them were killed and injured.
They were indeed. And famously, I suppose there are two female members, not just ICA, but not just Cumann na mBan, but also ICA, Irish Citizen Army members, who are keenly involved in the 1916 Rising. One is Kathleen Lynn, who, as medical officer, is one of the senior participants in the Rising, and she organises the surrender. The second is, and again, my memory escapes here, but Elizabeth O'Farrell, I think, takes the surrender with Pádraig Pearse, and there is that famous photo of Pearse issuing the surrender, and all you can see beside him are a pair of women's boots, because the woman standing beside him has been airbrushed out of the photo just to, I suppose, make it clear that this is Pearse standing next to Lowe, and that, you know, there might not be any confusion here. So it's a sort
but
of a
she's
standard.
The one who brought the flag of surrender.
Exactly. So yeah. on the 29th of April, she's the one that actually ventures forth, enters into a parley. She's detained by Lowe and she's interrogated. Then she goes back to the volunteer lines and she accompanies Pearse for that final surrender.
Very quickly, Ray says, what's the English translation of Cumann na mBan, and are they still in existence? I would have thought it's the Society of Women. But
the initial Cumann na mBan described themselves as Cumann na mBan, or the Irish Women's Council, and then Cumann na mBan became their sole trading name as such. In terms of their current existence today, Cumann na mBan have been very active, and we might have to go deep into the Falls Road to find them today or further, but certainly all the way through the Northern Irish Troubles, they were an active group.
Conor Mulva and Mary Murphy, many thanks for joining me this evening. The Women's History Association of Ireland is organising a conference, Cumann na mBan 100, at Collins Barracks this Friday and Saturday. We've put details on our website. There's also photos there and documents relating to the item. Thanks to Conor. Our thanks today also to our reader Angus McInally for his Scouser turn a little bit earlier.